I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, July 8th, episode 93 of Pandemic. What can we look forward to when the overwhelming majority of adults are vaccinated? Well, the answer is that depends. There are variables and, of course, variants. Different governments are adopting different approaches. And today, listener, we're going to return to the example of Israel, which we've looked at on this podcast three times before. Outbreaks of the Delta variant, despite almost all of the adult population being vaccinated, have been a cause of concern there. So let's have a detailed look at what's going on and how they're dealing with it. Our guest once more is Amos Harel, the defence analyst with the Israeli daily Haaretz, who has, for much of this pandemic, been looking at the coronavirus threat. So Amos Harel, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's been generally, I think, a kind of a crystal ball gazing exercise we've done. Israel is so far ahead in the vaccination rates that it's good to check in with you every so often and see what life is like in such a vaccinated population. I was checking the statistics there, and Ireland has 68% of its adult population with one dose. That's over 80% in Israel using the mRNA vaccine. What's the uptake been like for people with two doses as well?
So the exact numbers are, I think, 88% of the adult population received, I think most of them received two doses, but at least one dose. And 61% of all Israelis received one dose, at least one dose of Pfizer vaccine. So things have improved quite a lot from March onwards. By June, it seemed that as if everything was back to normal. I think one of the last decisions made by the Netanyahu government was that masks were no longer needed in even in close spaces. And scientists here was beginning to speak of herd immunity. And even when the Delta variant struck in the UK, we kept hearing explanations from doctors and scientists and ministers here saying, well, this is not the same as the UK. Everybody here received the Pfizer mRNA vaccine, which is considered, at least by Israelis, to be the best suited for the challenge. Most people have two doses and not one, and therefore our situation will be better and the variant would not strike here. It turns out that, as usual during this crisis, they were actually wrong. And by late June, we've seen a small outburst of cases again. And people think now that it's likely more dangerous, that the whole sense of approaching herd immunity, and our scientists were talking about this during April and May, now seems further away. The latest number of cases is around 500 a day, which is somewhere around 55 to 60 cases per million people a day. That's not terrible. We've been up to 10,000 cases a day at the height of the crisis, but the numbers are going up, and both the government and the Israeli public are more worried than before.
And what's most concerning from the Israeli point of view, with all you've done on the vaccination front, is the numbers of people who have been vaccinated who are becoming infected.
Yes, but the actual numbers are not clear yet. There was a story which broke here 2 days ago. There was an announcement made by the Ministry of Health saying that their research has shown that actually the Pfizer vaccine was not as efficient against infections when it comes to the Delta variant. The number they used was 64% efficiency, while they still maintained that when it comes to severe illness, the efficiency remains around 93 to 95%. But this announcement by the Ministry of Health was criticized by experts here and abroad, it turns out that not enough information was published and they may have got the data wrong. I would assume, speaking to scientists and experts here, that actually still vaccinated people are much better off even with the Delta variant, and probably the efficiency against infection is somewhere between 70 to 80%, although we don't know the exact number. The main issue here now for the government's policies, and this may sound familiar because you're following closely the situation in the UK, is what kind of policy to adopt now. Do we only focus on severe cases? If that's the case, then this is not a big deal. We have now 40 severe cases of COVID in Israeli hospitals. At the height of the pandemic, we had about 1,300. So the hospital system is doing rather well. This is what the people who are more moderate, so to speak, regarding the pandemic are saying. We should only focus on that. On the other hand, those who tend to take more harsher and quicker steps are saying, look, the numbers are rising quite quickly. We rose from about 20, 30 cases a day 3 weeks ago to 500. If we don't stop this now, we will be facing a huge escalation and we'll see the pandemic all over the place within weeks, and we need to take steps now. The interesting issue here is that we have, of course, a new government and it's facing this kind of crisis for the first time. With Netanyahu, it was quite clear most of the time. He turned to be a sort of an alarmist about the pandemic. He tended to take stronger action quicker. And mostly, of course, in the later stages of his government, he was very proud of his achievement regarding the vaccination process. Bennett is looking at this slightly different. The new prime minister is emphasizing the need for the economy to stay on course. And he's actually stepping on the brakes during the discussions and preventing the experts from the Ministry of Health from implementing steps that he sees as too harsh considering the current situation.
And what is it that they want to do? Is it increased mask wearing? There's talk of, is it stricter quarantine enforcement and even the use of electronic tags for people who have been found to be infected?
So mask wear is back, thankfully not outside. This was pure nonsense in my view to begin with. But the mask mandate regarding closed spaces is back, and it makes sense considering the rise in the number of cases. There's a discussion right now about what to do with parents who have kids who are infected with COVID, because most of these kids, of course, are asymptomatic, and the parents themselves have been vaccinated. So if the parents are not actually ill and are not showing any symptoms, and we don't even know, some of them have not been tested, do we force them to self-quarantine considering the situation? And there are a lot of unknowns here, more than anything else. Although we have established that people who are vaccinated could be infected with the Delta variant, what do we know about their possibility? What is the chance of these people who are asymptomatic and infected to infect somebody else? There are a lot of unknowns here, and the government is moving through uncharted territory, because this wasn't the case a few months ago when most of the population was unvaccinated. Now, the people who are, I call, moderates on this issue are saying, look, young children are not in real danger. The numbers may be going up, but there are no deaths. The last person to have died in Israel from COVID is June 23rd to 24th. So that's 2 weeks ago. We don't have to panic anymore. We will have to live with the pandemic for the time being. This may take a year or two or three, as long as the world is having so much problems in vaccinating the whole population, especially in third world countries and so on. And they're saying, look, we need to adopt a more moderate policy or attitude towards the pandemic. We'll take it step by step. You know, at one point or another, we may need to take harsher action if it's absolutely necessary. But there's no point in returning to quarantine and returning to lockdown and all of this terrible adventure that we've been through during the last year.
Is that a reverse?
The way it seems right now, Bennett supports that, but we'll have to see how he deals with the challenge if the numbers keep rising.
And is that a reversal of Bennett's position? He was extremely critical of Netanyahu at one point for, I think, not implementing more measures to combat the virus. Has he moderated over time as Israel has become more vaccinated? Or is this a political stance he's adopted? What's your analysis?
It's an excellent question, because Bennett is hard to pinpoint. That goes to everything he does. You know, he's a startup guy. To his whole attitude is a sort of an entrepreneur. So it's hard to say, it's hard to pinpoint what his actual policies and positions are. At the beginning of the pandemic, he was in Netanyahu's government as a defense minister, but he paid close attention to what was happening and he demanded more and more involvement and more action. Later on, when he was in the opposition, he tended to emphasize the economic problems and to demand the government would be more proactive, helping businessmen, helping workers, and so on. Now he's in this tight spot himself. It's much easier to criticize somebody else than to take the actual decisions when there are so many unknowns. But as far as we can tell from recent weeks, and he's only been in office for 3.5 weeks, I think he's taking a more cautious position. He's not much of an alarmist, and he speaks in the more moderate terms regarding the dangers of the virus. He's trying to speak to the Israeli public and not to frighten them. Netanyahu was all about emphasizing the dangers. He compared the pandemic to medieval times and so on. Sometimes it was quite frightening. Of course, there was much more reason to be afraid at the beginning of the pandemic with no vaccines. I think that Bennett is slightly more realistic about the situation right now. But as I said, it all depends on the sheer numbers. If the numbers continue to go up, then he will be facing a different kind of challenge. In a way, what we're seeing in the UK, Israel is about 3 or 4 weeks behind the UK when it comes to the Delta variant because of the reasons we've mentioned. It hit us after it hit the UK. And Prime Minister Johnson, as you know, has announced a new policy within 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. We'll have to see how Israel operates. And I think that Israel will be following very closely what's going on in London while making its own decisions about the policy here.
The economy that you mentioned there, I mean, there'd be a fairly healthy tourist industry in Israel with people traveling to see sites in the Holy Land from all over the world. What's the thinking on that at the moment? Because isn't the suspicion that the Delta variant came in through lapses in the airport and then spread within Israel mostly thereafter?
It's quite clear that this is exactly how it was spread in Israel. Remember, we're not Ireland, but we are in some ways an island state. And the main gate of entrance to Israel is through the Ben-Gurion airport near Tel Aviv. And it's quite clear that there were not enough restrictions and that the government was not implementing the actual decisions that were made in order to force both returning Israelis and some visitors, some foreign visitors, to self-quarantine and take the test and to make sure that people were not spreading the pandemic. This is how the Delta variant is spread in recent weeks. Regarding tourism, in early June, they decided the deadline was July 1st. And that after July 1st, tourists would no longer need the specific permission in order to enter Israel. They changed that about 2 weeks ago and delayed the deadline to August 1st. Considering the number of cases right now, I think they'll have to wait some more. And that we won't have many tourists around in Israel during this summer. On the other hand, many Israelis are going abroad. Israelis are quite fond of traveling. People could explain that in a sort of a siege mentality that was here in many years and so on. But in the last decade or so, Israelis were all over the place, visiting everywhere, and almost every second or third Israeli family was traveling abroad during the summer vacations. The numbers are not the same as they were in 2019, but they're much higher than 2020. Bennett, in fact, 2 weeks ago, called on the Israeli public to show some restraint and not to travel abroad this summer if it's not absolutely necessary and so on. But there are still thousands of Israelis going, flying overseas every day. And this is, of course, from the point of view of fighting the pandemic, this is, of course, problematic. By now, they've announced that about 20 different countries are defined as red states from the Israeli perspective, and people need to quarantine once they're back, including Israelis. But I think the numbers would go up, and I think if the Delta variant continues to spread all over the place, that many Israelis will bring it back with them in the following months. But I can tell you that, you know, my own experience, my friends, families, and so on, every middle-class or upper-middle-class Israeli family is having the same dilemma right now. Should we travel this year after avoiding that for the last 18 months? Is it dangerous? if we're all vaccinated, is there still danger? How much public responsibility should we show? Or is the fact that we and our children are vaccinated, is that enough to decide to fly abroad? I can tell you that personally, we've decided to delay our plans for at least another month and to see where this is heading. But there are still many people who are traveling on a daily basis right now. And this is a matter of quite some concern among the public health experts.
And what's the uptake on vaccination been like amongst children? I mean, parents might be happy to take it for themselves, but Israel was kind of ahead of the posse when it came to vaccination for children, those between 12 and 16, and administering the Pfizer-BioNTech. I think most of the data that the rest of the world is operating off is based on Israeli studies.
So about a month ago, the decision was made to permit vaccination of 12 to 15-year-olds. The public cooperation of that in the beginning was quite low. Again, at that time, there were 20 to 30 cases a day, and there was no sense of an emergency. So mostly families who were planning to go abroad and had children who were that age did vaccinate their kids. Others preferred to wait. Again, I can tell you from my own experience, our youngest son is 14, and he did receive his first dose three weeks ago, and he's about to receive the second dose next Sunday. But other than that, most people preferred to wait. People tend to be more concerned about the health of their children, on the one hand, regarding vaccines. And on the other hand, they don't see this as a clear and present danger, COVID, for kids. Right now, because of the rise in the number of cases, the government, there are commercials, advertisements on every hour on TV with doctors calling on the public to vaccinate their kids, kids who are over 12. I think the numbers are around 20,000 people who get the vaccine every day. That's not enormous, but just to compare, a few weeks back it was around 3,000. So people are more aware right now, slightly more frightened because of the arrival of the Delta variant, and therefore more willing to vaccinate their kids. I think the latest number is that around 20% of kids between 12 and 15 have already received at least one dose. They're hoping to vaccinate a few hundred thousand more kids during the next month or so. There's also the question of deadlines. I think Israel has had some problems with that because the expiration date of some of the first doses of the vaccines is around mid-July, and therefore both the government and the Ministry of Health are applying pressure on people to try and vaccinate kids as soon as possible in order to not to throw away too many vaccines.
That issue of the expiration date on the vaccines, I think there's 700,000 of them going to South Korea who are taking them in despite them nearing the vaccination date, on the basis that they'll exchange, I think, is it fresher doses when they get supplies later in the year. There was the same proposal for, I think, the Palestinian Authority. Was it over 1 million doses? And there were some difficulties there, which both sides dispute exactly what the nature of that was. What was the situation there? Because, I mean, when you're looking at kind of red zone countries and areas where vaccine uptake has either not been available or not high, and infection rates are potentially going to be higher than in Israel, the West Bank is obviously an area that could be a COVID reservoir as far as Israel is concerned.
So it's exactly the way you described it. The first attempt was to solve this matter by providing the Palestinians with the Pfizer vaccines who were about to expire. There was actually an agreement that was arrived at. I don't think they've signed it, but there was an agreement. Once it got published, the PA, the Palestinian Authority, received quite a lot of criticism at home, both for letting Israel get rid of its soon-to-expire vaccine doses, and for political reasons as well. There's always tension that has to do with the Israeli occupation and so on. So this deal was canceled. Then it worked quite a lot to try and find an alternative deal. And this week, as you said, it was announced that South Korea would actually receive most of those vaccine doses. I assume South Koreans are pretty efficient at delivering those to their population. There's quite a need there. And Israel, in return, would get some of the Koreans' doses in the latest part of this year, somewhere around the winter. Regarding the Palestinians, it's an ongoing matter. I think we've discussed that when you interviewed me in the past. I think that there is a moral obligation, and I think that there's also an instrumental reason for Israel to help the Palestinians. No matter what you think of the Israeli occupation, in the end, these are two populations who live in close proximity of each other. And as you know, there are tens of thousands of Palestinians who work inside Israel. So if you don't help vaccinating the Palestinians, in the end, it will come back and haunt us as well. There has been some slight improvement. I think they received both Chinese and Russian vaccines lately. There are all kinds of promises of them, of the Palestinians, both in Gaza and the West Bank, receiving mRNA vaccines pretty soon. So hopefully that will improve the situation. But right now, you have a situation in which most of the Israeli public over 12 is, of course, vaccinated, while in the Palestinian territories, it's just a minority which is beginning to receive their vaccine doses as we speak.
What about populations within Israel where the uptake has been slow? Has there been a difficulty breaking into, for example, the Israeli Arab population and the ultra-Orthodox population?
So the ultra-Orthodox were no problem at all. They were at the center of the pandemic in Israel in the first and second and third waves. But immediately after that, especially because they were hit so badly, the rabbis, their religious leaders and so on called on everybody to receive the vaccines, and there was no problem at all. I think that the actual percentage is higher than the general public. Arab Israelis, it's slightly lower. It is a problem in some towns, mostly people on the periphery and so on. And the most problematic part of the population is the Bedouin tribes. These are people who are Arab Muslims, but mostly in the past lived as the nomads and so on. And they're usually slightly behind the general population on many matters, including health issues and so on. And according to details that were published today, the data shows that in some of these Bedouin towns and villages, most of them in the south of Israel, in the Negev area and the desert, the percentage is around 30%. It's true of people who received the vaccine, so it's less than half of the general population. It's true that these families have usually more kids, so some of them cannot get the vaccine anyway because they're younger than 12, but still, there needs to be an improvement there. The new Minister of Health, Nitzan Horowitz, just announced yesterday that they were applying more pressure there in order to convince people to get the vaccine soon.
Finally then, one man whose quarantine is ending is Benjamin Netanyahu, who's still been in the Prime Minister's residence despite not being Prime Minister for some weeks. He lost the recent election. He didn't get the vaccine bounce he'd been hoping for.
It's quite interesting. In the end, and again, history will judge, because it's too soon to tell. We, as I've mentioned, a few weeks back, even the most cautious experts in Israel were talking of herd immunity. When you had less than 20 cases a day, it seemed as if Israel was the first country in the world to get over the pandemic, to beat the pandemic, or beat COVID, so to speak, thanks to this very effective vaccination campaign. Now, in the end, I think, and I'm not a Netanyahu supporter, as I mentioned to you before, I think in the end, this will be remembered as one of his greatest achievements. The fact that he was willing to put so much pressure on Albert Bourla, the general manager of Pfizer, and the fact that he was willing to, apparently, to give some personal and public data of the Israeli public, medical data, to the company, I think it worked in Israel's favor. This was what allowed us to receive so many doses of vaccines quite soon. And this is what allowed us to have more than 60% of the population vaccinated by April or May. So he was very successful in that. As you may remember, the elections were held in late March. And it was apparent by then that the numbers were going down quite drastically. And of course, he took credit for that. Netanyahu was never one to be humble about those issues. But my suspicion is that the public was so fed up with him after 12 years in office and after the corruption charges and then his trial that began and all kinds of personal incidents and so on. And I think the public was also frustrated with the way he dealt with the pandemic until the vaccines arrived. And that was too much. I mean, for more than 50% of the Israeli voters, it wouldn't have mattered by then. You remember President Trump's old saying about his ability to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and his voters would still vote for him in the next election. I think there were many Bibi supporters, Netanyahu supporters, who were thinking in similar terms regarding Netanyahu. But on the other hand, for every one of these, you had another voter who could not stand the thought of Netanyahu staying in office. And that was what finally led to his loss. And the fact that the people from both Israel's political right and left were willing to cooperate in order to establish a new government and throw him out of office. So his tragedy, in a way, is that one of his most important public achievements is the vaccination process operation, and yet it didn't help him in order to survive in office. I think that he's facing bigger problems now. As I mentioned, he's on trial. It will be very, very difficult for him to stop the trial now after he's not in office anymore. And I doubt whether he'll manage to stage a political comeback. Of course, he's the head of the opposition. But then again, the general sentiment is moving against him and not in his favor.
Okay, well, Amos Harel, thanks very much. And as we record this on Wednesday, of course, by the time listeners hear this on Thursday, you'll have a president, Isaac Herzog, of Irish heritage. So congratulations, Cocorgicus, as we say in Irish.
Thank you. Okay, great call. Good
All the best.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye. And that's it for another episode of Pandemic. There will be no episode next week. I'll be taking some leave. But if you do want to get in touch, you can email colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie. Or you can contact me on Twitter @colmomongain. If you found this podcast interesting, do leave us a rating and or a review on your platform of choice to say so. And if you want to listen to any more episodes, www.rte.ie/news/pandemic is where you can find them. We're back soon. Stay safe, take care, and thanks for listening.